Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I am your host, Mitch Robbins. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Ms. Julia Campbell, who is the Talent Acquisition Manager at Terumo Medical Corporation. Now, Julia is no stranger to recruitment herself. She's been in this business for, I think, a little over 14 years or so. The last 8.5, she's worked for Terumo Medical. I'm having Julia on the show for a variety of reasons that I'm excited to dig into, but one of the facts that you should know is that she's got experience both in my world, in third-party recruitment, and helping run the talent acquisition function internally. If you're not familiar with Terumo Medical, Terumo Medical Corporation has been around for well over 100 years. Julia supports one of the primary divisions of Terumo, where they produce marketed products like guide wires, catheters, sheaths, embolization products used in a variety of interventional procedures. And what we're going to learn today is all about the technical areas that Julia and her team supports when it comes to recruitment. So without further ado, it's a pleasure to introduce you to the show. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to dig into this. And, you know, one of the first things I want to talk about is, it's so funny when I talk with recruiters who are recruiters by trade for that matter, 99% of us will say, look, I had no idea I was going to be in recruitment. I fell into it and it was kind of happenstance. And everybody's got their own happenstance story. I want the audience to hear yours, and I don't know yours. So if you would share with us, how did you get into recruiting way back when in the first place?
Yeah, for sure. So I went to the University of Delaware. I was a double major in English and Spanish. And at the time, my senior year in college, I needed to take on a full-time job. So I started working for a credit card company. I was a call center representative. So taking, you know, inbound calls for customer service, collections, and then I got the privilege of taking the escalated calls. So I got to talk to the really angry customers and, you know, try to diffuse, you know, whatever their issues were. And so I did that from senior year and a couple of years after graduation. And I think I learned a lot, but it was just kind of not what I saw myself doing for, you know, my career. And so I actually had been at a local bar watching an Eagles game and was talking with a friend of mine. And she was a year, I think, younger than me. And she had just graduated college and was telling me about this position that she interviewed for and had accepted with a company called Aerotech, which was a staffing agency. And I had never heard of a staffing agency. I had no idea what it was. And I said, you know, are they still hiring? She said, you know, they target folks that are right out of college. And so we'll kind of give you your first shot in recruiting. And I said, I will literally do anything other than what I am doing right now. You know, you can tell me, I don't care what this company does. I will do anything other than what I'm doing right now. And so kind of took the leap from there. So, you know, she was working at a New Jersey based location, and they had plans to open up an office in Delaware, which is where, you know, I lived at the time. I still live. And so she said, look, I'll refer you over to the gal that recruited me. And, you know, maybe we can just see how it goes. So that's how it all happened. So she referred me to Aerotech. I interviewed and I got the job there. And then about 6 to 8 months later, we ended up opening up a satellite office in Delaware. And then that was my home office.
That's awesome. And the rest is history. How'd you end up with Terumo?
So Aerotech is part of a larger group called Allegis. And so Allegis has multiple staffing agencies under their umbrella, but they also have an RPO wing or arm, I guess you could say. And so after a few years with Aerotech, I moved over to the RPO arm of Allegis, and I was on site. I was an on-site recruiter for a bank and a large credit card company. And we ended up losing, I worked there for 2 or 3 years. So I did kind of start to get some of that corporate recruiter experience. I enjoyed my time in agency. You know, I liked, you know, the competitive edge of kind of getting spread on a weekly basis. I won the Cancun trip, but I really wanted, you know, some corporate experience. So I took on that role for a couple of years. We ended up losing the agreement, you know, with that particular bank. And so found out essentially that I had, I think it was 90 days to find a new position. Ended up being a really big, you know, blessing in disguise. I started applying to anything and everything that I could, you know, find online, every recruiter job I saw posted, and ended up, you know, getting the interview at Terumo that way.
Wow. Wow. So. And so you and I were talking offline, you know, you've been there 8.5 years. Most people, you know this because you recruit people every day. Most people are in their jobs roughly 2.5 years, I think is the average tenure as of
right.
late. You've been there 8.5. Talk about the growth, just real quick. Talk about the growth that you've seen since you've been there at Terumo.
Well, so, you know, candidates always ask, you know, so what's the reason that you stay at Terumo? What do you like about the company? And this is what I always share. So when I started, the United States division of TMC, you know, we're a global company, but we have several offices here in the U.S. So we have a corporate headquarters in New Jersey. We have my facility here in Elkton. And then we have some distribution centers in the U.S. So when I started, I was the very first full-time hire here in Elkton. So previously, there had been some contract recruiters, but, you know, the site was never big enough to kind of warrant a full-time head. So when I joined, we had about 450 people here. We're a manufacturing facility, so we have hourly associates, operators that are, you know, making the products and running the machines. And then we also have exempt workforce. So the engineers, project managers, scientists, you know, all the way up to our senior leadership teams. And so in total, it was about 450 people when I joined. Now, if we were, you know, fully staffed, which maybe one day that will happen, but, it, you know, in our hourly workforce, but now if we were fully staffed, we'd be at about 1,100 people. So, you know, at the time that I start, we currently have a manufacturing facility in Puerto Rico that we did not have when I started. We just built a brand new distribution center in Allentown, PA, about 2 years ago that did not exist when I started. I have multiple examples. I mean, pretty much every site, including the site where I sit, you know, has been expanded and refurbished. And so including our corporate headquarters in New Jersey. So it's just been amazing. I mean, I've recruited entire teams that did not, you know, exist when I started. There's one team in particular, a team of quality engineers that I always reference where when I began, we had, I want to say 5 engineers on that team. And now we have about 30. So.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. What, and it's so gratifying, I can imagine, for yourself, considering you're like, look, I know where we came from. I know where we're at today. And I had a pretty significant influence as to who's on this team and how they ended up, you know, being attracted to Terumo in the first place. So good on you. Talk about, if you would, because I want the audience to understand, what piece of the business do you primarily recruit for yourself?
So I do primarily recruit for the Elkton facility. We're in Elkton, Maryland. So it's pretty much like the northeasternmost part of Maryland. So we're about 45 minutes south of Philadelphia, kind of right in that little cluster where it's Maryland. You know, you can kind of throw a stone and be in Maryland, Delaware, or Pennsylvania. So that's where we're located. And so I primarily support this facility where we have our manufacturing functions. We do also have product development here as well. So I have a nice mix of both manufacturing, kind of sustainment engineering activities, as well as product development. I have supported, although not as much, I've supported some of our commercial functions out of our New Jersey office, our corporate headquarters. I've hired some sales folks recently. And I've also supported our Puerto Rico manufacturing facility in Puerto Rico, but mainly I support Elkton. And so the groups here would be quality, operations, and then also just kind of random, you know, just quality, operations, and NPD, I'm sorry, and then kind of random positions in between. So Like if we have an IT position, or I recruited all of our HR people here, you know, so I was the first time I was a team person with one HR person when I started, and now we have, you know, five or six, you know, so kind of those ad hoc positions as well, support. So anything on the exempt side.
So does that include engineering as well?
Yes. So all of quality, primarily engineers, all of NPD are engineers. And then ops, it's the roles that I work on are all engineers. Yes.
Got it. Okay. So this is interesting because you recruit for a lot of very technical roles. And one of the things that I know, because I see this all the time from my own vantage point, is that recruiters sometimes, especially internally, can be stretched across multiple functional areas. And it's nearly impossible to be an expert in everything that you recruit for. Yet hiring managers have the expectation that you are going to hopefully have the wherewithal to not waste their time and bring forward people that they should be talking to. And one of the biggest frustrations that I hear from the streets, so to speak, from hiring managers is my internal HR team, they just don't get it. They don't understand. They're sending me people that, you know, they have titles and they think because they have the right title, when you dig in, they actually don't have the experience. I don't think that's necessarily the case with you because you wouldn't be in the role that you're in 8.5 years later and continue to be promoted internally. Talk about that if you would. How do you balance the demands of having to recruit across multiple functional areas, but truly understand what you're recruiting for?
So, you know, it does help that I've been here for a little while. I will say that. But what I've always done from, you know, day one, and even in my last position, you know, when I was with the credit card company, that's really helped me is I do have a very thorough, you know, intake call with the hiring manager, you know, when we first start the recruiting process. And, you know, a lot of times when I meet with them, the initial reaction is kind of, well, you have the job description, so what more do you need? And so, you know, my pushback to that is, you know, the job description, I mean, is going to be that for hiring a quality engineer too. The job description is going to be the same for every single quality engineer too that we hire on this team. However, you know, each person is going to be supporting a different department or a different project or a different, you know, there's a different need that's prompting this hire. So I want you to share with me, you know, information outside the job description. Not only that, what's some information that's going to excite the candidate about this role? Why do they want to do this job? How is it going to enhance their experience? And so when I start to, when I start to probe into the, you know, tell me about your group more specifically, apart from the job description, tell me about the day to day, and then tell me about what projects this person's going to be working on. You know, that really gets the conversation started because if I can visualize in my mind what the person is going to be doing, it really helps me when I'm doing my phone screen, even my search and my reach out, you know, on LinkedIn or the various tools that I use, it really helps me to be able to visualize the person, the experience that I'm looking for. So a lot of it does go to that, you know, initial intake. And then, you know, in addition, after we've conducted our interviews, you know, we always have a debriefing session where the whole interview panel comes together and we give feedback on each candidate that we've interviewed. And so as candidates get, you know, declined or as candidates get kind of, you know, praised and, you know, receive positive feedback, I take notes on everything that is being said in those debrief meetings. And so if the hiring manager is telling me for a quality engineer, you know, they were pretty weak in, you know, PFMEA and they didn't understand, you know, how the PFMEA kind of translates into, you know, the control plan. So I'm not going to go with them. You know, I'm copying all of that down. And then, you know, at the end of the intake, I'm saying, hey, real quick, you know, hiring manager, you mentioned a PFMEA control plan. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit more so I understand? And I, you know, I aggregate that information and that feedback and I hold on to it. And whatever I don't kind of get in those meetings, I'm Googling. So,
you know what? First of all, I want to reach through this screen that's separating us and give you a hug because the fact that you said, hey, so many hiring managers give me the job description and expect me to run with it. And you have the backbone to push back and say, look, that's not going to help us recruit what you want. What is going on? Yes, this is the structure, but really let's talk about, you know, life in your department. What truly do you want help with? What the job description doesn't necessarily paint the picture that's in your mind. And let's talk about that. I love that. I love it so much because it happens I mean, it runs rampant in our industry. Here's the job description, go recruit it. And then you show up with something that is according to the job description. They're like, no, that's not what I want. So it's like, okay.
Right. And it's worth mentioning, I mean, some of these job descriptions are 10 years old, right? You know, yes. Our company, our organization is very different now than when this job description was written. And yes. So that's something else, you know, the requirements of today's business are different than the requirements and demands of 10 years ago business, right? So, and it's okay. We can still use that job description. It's still, you know, an approved document, you know, within our quality system. And it covers the, I guess, the kind of bare bones requirements. But again, what are those things that, you know, are going to be really interesting to the candidate? And where are they going to be, you know, what experience is going to really support us in the business that we are today? And that's really what I'm looking for.
What drives you to have the motivation to go and Google some of this terminology, things that you don't necessarily understand?
excuse me. I feel that I can, well, number one, you know, so a big one that was really eye-opening for me. So we're in, again, medical device. We're FDA-regulated organization. And so one of the things that when I first started here, I was recruiting on a lot of new product development engineers. And so the hiring managers are telling me, you know, they need design control experience. And I'm like, okay, yeah, design control. So my search term is design control, you know, as I'm trying then this very limited search, pretty narrow scope. And I'm, you know, then when I would submit design control candidates, you know, they would be getting rejected because, oh, they don't have enough in terms of the upfront design control requirements. You know, they need to understand user needs and they need to understand design inputs and outputs. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I didn't even know I was looking for that, right? So I started Google, literally going to the FDA website and, you know, looking for process documents on, you know, how to kind of lay out a design control process within medical device. And so that just really broadened my search for, you know, there's multiple steps within the design control process and it takes, you know, quite a bit of time to actually execute it in the development process. And so, but it really broadened my search because now I know, oh, there's all these different components. There's all these different steps. They're kind of in pretty much a linear order that they need to take place. And so, you know, just having that additional research, you know, in that arena or that, I guess, aspects, you know, really helped me to broaden my searches and I can include more terms that I, you know, hadn't been previously familiar with. And another big takeaway from me on that was, it was almost like when the hiring manager was telling me we need design control experience, they're assuming that I kind of know what that is. And so I wasn't really getting the breakdown from them that I needed. And at the time I was new, I didn't have the language to ask, you know, well, what are the aspects of the design control process? And, you know, it's a spectrum. So do you need someone on the front end of the spectrum or the last, far end of the spectrum? And so I didn't know what I didn't know. And so doing that independent research really helped me with, again, that the trying to visualize the candidate that I'm looking for and, you know, what their experience looks like.
I hope the folks at Terumo are listening and realize what a gem they have in you, because a lot of people would have either A, just kept trying to bring in more volume of resumes, thinking that somebody's going to stick and the hiring manager is going to like one of these and I'll just use strength in numbers to figure this out. Or they would have thrown in the towel and says, we need an agency to come in and help us because I don't know what this person is. So good for you. Now, do the hiring managers understand the research and the time that you're investing? Have you made that vocal? Like, have you vocalized that?
I think I'm sure I've kind of dropped hints here and there, you know, over the years. You know, the ones I've been recruiting, I haven't been recruiting on product development as much lately. I've been recruiting a ton on quality engineering. So that's kind of been the latest that I've been really learning about. And, yeah, they're aware, you know, I asked the questions like I was kind of referencing before, you know, you have a PFMEA, which is a process failure mode, you know, analysis. And then you look at all the areas within your process that could potentially fail. And then from there, you develop what's called a control plan, where you try to control all of those potential failure modes. So, of course, you can't think of every single possible thing that could fail or go wrong in a manufacturing process. So then from there, you know, you have to develop your sampling plan. That's going to allow you to kind of hand pick randomly components, devices, what have you, and sample them and see if they're truly failing or truly passing it. So again, it's this continuum within this process. And so, you know, as we go through, you know, our debriefing conversations that I was referencing before, and, you know, I'm talking with them about, of course, the candidates at hand that we've just interviewed, but I'm also talking with them about, oh, well, I interviewed five other people that you guys didn't even see because they didn't have process validation or they didn't have test method validation. So they know that they're not talking to everyone I'm talking to. You know, they know that there truly is a funnel process happening, and I'm distilling down, you know, the folks that they're being put in front of them, because I do have an understanding of, I have an understanding of, you know, what they're looking for and the questions that they're asking in their interviews.
I think in a role like yours, you know, in talent acquisition leadership for that matter, you have a huge responsibility on your shoulders in a couple ways. One, you're in essence the gateway to the organization for people who are both proactively seeking you guys out and for those who are being tapped on the shoulder who otherwise wouldn't have known about the opportunity. But then the other piece of that is your responsibility is to be able to look the hiring manager in the eye and say, you are wrong sometimes. Sometimes when they say there's more candidates, no. As a matter of fact, here's the accountability that we have to you. Here's our plan. Here's what we've done to execute the plan. Here's what we need from you, which is to make an educated decision based on the talent that's in front of you because we've done our homework. And I think it takes somebody with enough strength and expertise to be able to have that conversation. Do you have any thoughts around that piece as far as, you know, when a hiring manager's like, who else you got? And you're like, dude, like we could go on forever with this, but this is kind of what the market's telling us. And we either A, have to tweak something, or B, you got to make a decision here because who else do you expect us to recruit?
Yeah. So a few things I'll say about that. So the first is I kind of assume the play, you know, when I have my initial intake with them, when I'm explaining my process. So I tell them, if I talk to someone that I really like, I'm putting them on your calendar. Okay, you're not seeing anyone that I'm on the fence about in terms of an interview. If there's someone I'm on the fence about, I'll share the resume with you and ask my questions. But if I talk to a candidate and I feel strongly about them, I'm scheduling an interview with you. Are you okay with that? You know, just want to make sure you're good with that. Yeah, I guess so. Perfect. You know, so I'm letting them know right off the bat, I'm confident in the people that I'm presenting. I've worked on this skill set before. If it is a very brand new skill set that I've never, ever seen, I might tell them, hey, you know, I'll kind of shoot you the first one or two. Let me know if I'm on the right track. But from there, I'll just go ahead and schedule. It takes time, it saves time. I apologize. So, you know, kind of right there, it's eliminating the pushback of them just like reviewing the resume and wanting to see another resume and wanting to see another resume. Again, it's that distilling down process. You know, for every five I talk to, you might see two. So that's part of it. The other is that I've myself and my two recruiting partners, we created and are now delivering interview training to all of our hiring leaders across multiple to remote sites. And you know, with that, one of the big things that we focus on in the training is, you know, how to think outside the box in terms of who you're hiring. So same plus same equals same. So if we're always hiring the exact same profile with the exact same experience, with the exact same, you know, educational background, you have a whole team of folks that are addressing problems or viewing problems through a very similar lens. And so we've really been trying to work with our leaders on, you know, maybe you can change up the educational requirements. You know, maybe you can change up, you know, coming outside of industry. You know, maybe we don't need every single person to have medical device experience. And so that's also been really helpful in, you know, getting them in expanding the talent pool, number one, you know, that we're able to pull from, and helping them to see that, you know, who truly is out there. We don't need these, you know, cookie cutter profiles, you know, in order for folks to be successful. So that's also helped me a little bit with, you know, kind of my time to fill, and I think building credibility with them.
I was going to say, you have to have some trust built if you're telling them up front, hey, if I believe that they have the skills, I'm putting them on your calendar. And they have to trust that, okay, she's not going to waste my time. Like, she's serious. She's taking the time to do it. Julia, in internal recruiting, what do you think is the biggest challenge? What do you think is the toughest piece of internal recruiting?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if this applies across the board, but, you know, for me personally, you know, where we are located, you know, Elkton, Maryland is not exactly a hotbed of medical device or manufacturing for that matter. And so we have to relocate a lot of our candidates. And so just getting folks to come to the location, you know, selling people on a location that they've never heard of, you know, so I, what I do, literally when I'm on, you know, my phone screens is as I'm talking to them, you know, maybe they're on the West Coast or maybe they're in a major city where they're currently residing. And I'm, you know, I'm pulling up Zillow, I'm putting their address into Zillow. I'm getting like an estimate of the cost of living in like their neighborhood, what their house goes for. And I'm like, oh, this person lives in, you know, a 3-bedroom, you know, what have you for 500,000 is worth, and in this area it could be 250. You know, so I try to think of creative ways to attract them to our location. And oftentimes, you know, I'm not going to say in the moment, hey, by the way, I just Googled your house. It's a little, you know, creepy, but I will say one of the selling points for this area is, you know, you can get a 4-bedroom, you know, single family home with a great backyard and a pool for 300,000. And they're, you know, you can hear the dots connecting like, oh, well, you know, as I'm sitting here kind of looking at their home on Zillow. That's one of the big things that has kind of helped me with attracting people to the location, because honestly, that is my biggest challenge. I have a lot of offers to decline. You know, Elkton is a small town. So if you're in Chicago making a certain amount, you know, even though you, the candidate can realistically tell themselves, well, I'm coming to a lower cost of living area, you know, you're still seeing your base salary go down, you know? And so it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that, be okay with that. And so that's a big challenge, is I do have a decent amount of offers decline. And the feedback is always, seems like a great opportunity, seems like a great company, love meeting with everyone. And then there's the but, you know, so love the relocation. So that's the biggest challenge for me in my role.
Sure. You made a good point as far as trying to find value proposition, right? And I always say, gosh, people who listen to this show probably hear this ad nauseum, and they're probably going to be like, stop saying this, but it's true. When I look at a search, I look at it as the flip of a coin. On one side, you've got the performance profile, what somebody should have done in their previous experience that's going to be indicative of future success in the role that you need help with, right? Based on the priorities that you need help with. The flip side of that is the employer value proposition. What is so differentiating, so compelling, so unique that's going to stop somebody dead in their tracks and for them to at least see it as a no-brainer to have an exploratory conversation about the position? I have a question for you. We're in a down market. We just are. It's an employer-driven market right now from a talent perspective for the most part, especially in med tech. How important do you think it is to still have a strong employer value proposition when the candidate pool is richer than it normally is?
So, I mean, I think it's really important. You know, I think it's also really important that, you know, an organization lives up to their employee value proposition, because, you know, if I share an employee value proposition with a candidate, it needs to be something that we're truly doing, you know, at our organization. So we actually just rolled out at the beginning of this year, kind of our official, you know, Terumos, and not just TMC, but across multiple, you know, we're a global company. We sell product in 160 countries and we have manufacturing, you know, in these various kind of divisions and sister companies. I don't want to say in every country, I don't think that's true, but in many countries. And so how do we come up with an employee value proposition where, you know, it can apply to us globally? And so that, you know, just recently rolled out. And one of the things that it really emphasizes in, you know, the employee value proposition is, you know, you can grow your own way, you know, so you can, you know, we're looking for folks that want to come in, you know, that want to grow, that wants to, and our kind of slogan is that we want to contribute to society through healthcare, where our, that's our overarching goal is contributing to society through healthcare. And so, you know, the employee value proposition talks about building teams. It talks about innovation. And again, it talks about growth. And I think that's what folks really want to see is there's a lot of companies right now, and I even include this in my initial reach out on LinkedIn when I'm doing a cold in-mail to somebody on LinkedIn. There's a lot of companies that are unfortunately downsizing. There's a lot of companies that are laying off. There's a lot of companies that sadly, you know, didn't recover from COVID. There's, the market has shifted. And so through all of that from 2020 until present, you know, Terumo never did any sort of furlough. We never did any sort of, you know, mass layoff. We never, you know, bonuses were not cut, you know, so that's really important to candidates. And, you know, it does kind of reflect our employee value proposition. You know, you can come here and you can really grow and strengthen your skill set and also contribute, you know, to society. So yeah, I definitely think that's very important.
Last question for you. There's folks out there, you know, we've got a pretty wide audience. It's anywhere from executives in med tech to aspiring rock stars who are trying to climb the corporate ladder, to talent acquisition folks who are looking for, you know, different tips, tricks, and strategies to make their life better at work. Given how much of the recruiting that you do is on the technical side, do you have any advice for those who feel overwhelmed with some of the technical roles they're tasked with recruiting, and before they throw in the towel and say, "I'm just going to hire, you know, a headhunter to help me with this"? What advice might you share with them to help them make their lives a little bit easier?
I do think a lot of it for me goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where for me, it's a lot easier to recruit when I really, really understand the skill set. And a lot of times, not only talking to the hiring manager, but, you know, talking to the candidates. I used to feel uncomfortable, you know, asking an engineer, I'm sorry, I don't want to sound, you know, new, but I am, you know, and so can you explain a validation? What does that mean? You know, folks typically don't mind talking about themselves or sharing or trying to help someone else learn or develop in something in an area. So especially where they're an expert. And so not being shy to ask the questions. I mean, it happens even now, you know, a candidate's talking and sharing their experience. And I say, let me stop you right there. What is a fill in the blank, you know, what is that? I've never heard that term before. And they say, oh, no, sorry. Okay. And then I take it down in my notes and now I know it, you know? So I definitely think for me personally, it's a lot less intimidating when I know what I'm looking for. And I really understand the skill set. I've received a lot of, you know, makes me really proud. I've received a lot of kudos from candidates that ask me, are you an engineer? Do you have an engineering background? And I say, you know, no, ironically, I'm an English major. So kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. Yeah. But I do pride myself in learning my skill sets and, you know, kind of trying to speak the language. And as my boss says, you know, knowing enough to be dangerous. And so that's what I strive to do. And so when I can understand something, it's a lot less intimidating for me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And the other thing, too, you said something earlier that I was so grateful that you said, oh, it was about being okay asking questions about things you don't know. So a couple things. I think that ego really does get in the way where people feel like, oh, I really should know this, or I don't want to look foolish, or, oh my gosh, they're trusting me to recruit this and the candidates are going to think I'm an idiot if I ask questions about their own job and I'm the recruiter who's trying to bring them in. Man, throw that all out the window. I always say, look, I'm an expert when it comes to building people's careers and building teams. I'm not an expert. You're the expert in your technical function. So if I ask questions that seem naive, you know, bear with me because I'd love to learn more. It's all good. And, you know, you said people sometimes like to talk about themselves. No, people only want to talk about themselves. If you give them a platform to talk about themselves, believe me, people will appreciate that because it makes them feel good. So I love that you brought that up. That's probably the biggest takeaway right there at the end, I think, is if you don't know, ask. The other thing I would point out about yourself is just your proactive nature of not necessarily settling for not knowing and taking it upon yourself to do the homework, do the research, ask the tough questions, hold people accountable as far as the hiring managers of what's going to happen within the process, and then hold yourself accountable for showing up with excellent service. That's why you probably get the kudos all the time and people feel like, wow, this person really gets it. So good on you.
Well, thank you. The last tip I just wanted to share is, and I hope this is helpful to someone, but For me too, you know, when I'm on a phone screen, that initial phone screen, you know, taking control of the conversation, you know, it happens so often where I get on, you know, I have 30 minutes, the candidate gets 15 and I get 15, right? Yeah. So I need to understand what you do in 15 minutes and then I need to sell to Rumo in the other 15 minutes. And so 15 minutes is not much time, especially when we're going to talk about 20 years of working experience. And so when I get on the phone with them and I say, you know, thanks for taking the time to speak with me, you know, here's what we're going to talk about today. I want to understand your experience and then I'm going to share some about Terumo with you and see if there's a good potential match. 25% of the candidates from there, maybe a little higher, will then say, okay, great, thank you. Let me tell you about what I do, you know, and they'll kind of launch into their experience dating back, you know, to whenever. Maybe it's 4 pages on the resume ago or maybe it's 2 or 3 jobs ago. I want to ask you the questions that are important to me and important to the hiring manager that I need to know for the job. So I remember, you know, when I first started recruiting, feeling intimidated, where I felt like I just had to let them go. Sometimes I lose 6 or 7 minutes where they're sharing, you know, every job that they've worked out and every bullet point on the resume. And this really, truly isn't relevant, right? I want to know, do you have, you know, going back to the validation experience, have you ever laid out a validation strategy? What does that look like, right? Like, how are you prioritizing that work? I have things that I need to know. I have knockout questions that I've even, you know, I have from my hiring manager. If they say this, yes, we want them type of thing, right? So if you're not letting me as a candidate even get to the really relevant, you know, questions and information that I need to know, I can't really assess you. And so, you know, I always will, you know, I give them maybe a couple, maybe 1 minute, 2 minutes tops if they kind of launch into the experience. And then I very politely say, let me jump in really quick. And that really helps me, you know, like I take charge of the conversation and I make sure that I'm finding out you either have the info or you don't. And if you don't, I'm not passing you on, you know? And so that really helps me to ensure that I'm not sending candidates to hiring managers that I don't even know if they have the experience.
You know what? I'm going to elongate the conversation a little bit because this is so important. What is the number one piece of advice you would give to a candidate to have a successful initial interview with you to get through the process successfully?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't know what the person needs to ask you, the recruiter, or the hiring manager, you know, you don't know what they need to ask you and what they need to know. So be a listener and let kind of what I just really referenced is, you know, letting that person that's interviewing you lead the call. At the end of the call, they're going to open it up for questions. Hopefully, if they don't, that's when you would ask your questions, you know. But there are so many times where I do have that candidate that's really dominating the conversation and I'm trying to, I can't get a word in edgewise. You know, those folks I don't even pass on, right? You know, we need to have a little bit of emotional intelligence, which means we're listening for those social cues. If someone keeps saying, if someone's trying to cut in and you're not allowing that, I'm not getting the information that I need. So as a candidate, you really need to be kind of an active listener and allow the person interviewing you to direct, you know, and lead the call. And then, you know, of course, there's going to be opportunity for you to sell yourself. There's going to be opportunity for you to ask your questions. But if that recruiter can't get what they need from you in that limited time, I mean, my calendar is every 30 minutes are blocked, right? Like I'm cutting you off at 10:30 because I have to call the next person. And if you didn't get a chance to showcase your experience, I'm not passing you on.
Man, I love that. I love it so much because I constantly preach, you candidates have to think of themselves as a solution provider, not a piece of paper, not a candidate, but a solution provider to somebody's burning pains. Because if somebody's hiring for a job, they have challenges. They're either backfilling somebody, they're expanding, they've got urgent issues, they've got not so urgent, but they have issues that need to be solved, right? And your skill set supposedly is the solution to their issues. If you can't diagnose before you prescribe, well, that's malpractice, right? And so if you don't give someone like yourself the opportunity to ask the relevant questions, how can they position themselves to what is actually important to you guys? Mm-hmm. I love that so much. And I think so many people look at this differently. It's like, I've only got 30 minutes. I got to say as much as I possibly can so that they know I can really do this job, but they fail to do the exact same thing that they want to do, which is position themselves with the experience that you're looking for. So good on you for sharing that. I think that's really going to help a lot of people listening to this.
Awesome.
Listen, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Anything else that you want to share about the exciting stuff going on at Terumo? One of the things that we're going to do for sure, if you're okay with it, is we'll provide a link to your LinkedIn profile so people can reach out directly. We'll provide a link to Terumo. But is there anything else that you want to wrap up with that people should know about what's going on?
We're still growing, you know, every other day, you know, I'm getting a request from HR for a new position. So definitely keep an eye on us. You know, we are a mid-sized company in terms of medical device. You know, we're not Johnson & Johnson. We're not Medtronic. However, you know, we are a large growing, you know, very stable, but also trajecting upward, you know, organization. And, you know, some of the selling points that I shared before, you know, we are stable. We are, expanding, you know, we have, a product development pipeline. And so, my main challenge in recruiting is the location, but we're only 45 minutes south of Philadelphia. We're close to the beach, my other selling points. It really is a great organization. Even if you're not actively looking, you know, follow us on LinkedIn, you know, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always also open to a proactive conversation. You know, hey, Julia, I'm not looking right now, but I think in a year I might be. I still want to hear from you, you know, so even if it's just a connection or exchanging a few messages on LinkedIn, you know, we can learn from one another that way. So, you know, definitely open to that as well.
Amazing. All right, Julia. Well, thank you so much for being here and for the nuggets that you share. We wish you personally nothing but continued success and, of course, success, future success to come for the organization.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.